We're rolling, great, okay. Technology delivers. So, this afternoon I was talking about this early on with Rana. We've covered a lot of ground. We've covered a lot of ground over the last 6-7 weeks. There have been a lot of new ideas, a lot of new ways of looking at things, I expect, for many of you. And I thought it would be useful for us to just recap briefly, partly because when I was taught how to do things, you're always taught to remind people as reinforcement strategies, help you to remember what you've remembered or what you've forgotten. But also just as a way of us taking on board just how much ground we've covered, actually, just what we've gone into over the last few weeks, because there's been loads of stuff. I don't know, we're saying that she goes home every night with her mind sort of reeling with all these ideas. So we've been looking at the Wheel of Life. Pass them around. Hold on, I'll keep hold of one. So the Wheel of Life, well, you can look at it in different ways. And one of the ways, the main way we've been coming at it is as a kind of map of the human condition, yeah? A way of looking at how we function, our experience of the world, how humans operate, particularly from an unaware state, you know, how we operate, I suppose it's our default mode, you could say, what our default mode of operation is. So what's it showing us? So we start in the middle, and it shows us, we looked at the cock, the snake and the pig, yeah, these basic unhelpful emotions that drive us most of the time, yeah, when we're not sufficiently on the ball. So based in our ignorance of what we're truly like, of what the nature of existence is, how things actually are, we react to the world in terms of aversion to the things we don't like, hatred there, or of greed to the things that reinforce our way of how things are. Yeah. And there are any actions that we undertake that are based on these mental states of ignorance, ill will or greed, well, they always have painful consequences in the long run. And any actions that we take that are based on the opposites of those states, are based on awareness, generosity, love, kindness, well, those always have positive, always have pleasant fruits, consequences. And that's what's depicted in the second ring out, where you've got these figures descending in the dark on the right and ascending in the light on the left. And this general pattern plays itself out in you know, results in human experience, yeah? And the way in which human experience is summed up in the Wheel of Life is in terms of us inhabiting one of these six realms, yeah? These six realms correspond to the most habitual mental states that we live in. So if we're lucky, and our mental states are very blissful and pleasant, delightful, then we live in the realm of the gods. Yeah? And there are lots of different sorts of gods, lots of beings of greater and greater refinements and subtlety. There's the realm of the Titans, beings who dwell in a state of envy and competition. There's the realm of the hungry ghosts, the hungry goats. They're off there in the fields eating the thistles. The hungry ghosts, or the Arsia, no, hold on, what are hungry ghosts called? Praetors. So a realm of neurotic craving. Yeah. The hell realm, realms of intense suffering. The animal realm, which is just about eating, sleeping and shagging, frankly. And when we're at our best, our most balanced, we live in the human realm, a fully sort of balanced realm. So we sort of flip from one realm to the other, often during the course, you know, many realms in the course of a few hours. And we saw how there's a kind of antidote to apply as a way of helping us to move on from each of these realms, or a way in which we can think about how to respond to people who we come across who seem to be in these sorts of states. Yeah? So when we're in the realm of the gods, then we need to reflect on the principle of change in the world, yeah, and impermanence. When we're in a combative state, in a jealous state, when we're acting like a titan, then we need to introduce wisdom. We need to be clearer about what the real purpose of life is. What's important, I suppose, what's genuinely important. When we're neurotically craving, what we need to do is become objective. We need to be clear about what it is that the source, the thing that we're craving, what that can actually provide us with.
Stop that. Stop clicky noises.
When we're in a state of intense suffering, then we simply need some peace, really. And we need love and support in order to get that. When we're of an animalistic state of consciousness, when we're in a crude, basic state of consciousness, well, we need to look at trying to refine that, to cultivate ourselves, become a bit more cultured. And then when we're in a reasonably human state, well, that's when we can start seriously working on spiritual practice. We can start working on ethics. We can start working on meditation. So having looked at that, we then looked at the next realm out. We looked at these 12 nidanas. We looked at how the mind functions in a cyclic way, yeah, the basic pattern. And I'm going to go through that little summary that I made of how those 12 nidanas work. So I think that's the best way I can sum it up, I think. So through our ignorance of the way that things really are, we develop habits of beings and of relating to the world. And this gives us a particular perspective, which leads to states of mind which affect how we filter our experience. Yeah? Because we talked about how we don't just see things as they are, we filter them through our preconceptions. And when we have our experiences, then we find them that they're either painful or pleasurable or neutral. And that tends to be, and that's always based on what's gone before. It's based on the sort of person we've made ourselves into at this point. And unless we respond creatively to those feelings of pain or pleasure, then our automatic response is to crave the things we see as being pleasurable and to push and to be averse to the things that we perceive as being painful. So this leads to us either grasping or pushing away. Or rejecting. And all that does is just steepens those habits. It sets up those habits for the future. And that leads to us cycling through this loop again and again and again and again. Yeah. And that is what Buddhists call samsara. That is cyclic conditionality. Yeah. The reactive mind. It's mechanical, it's repetitive, it's painful. And that's a manifestation of conditionality, yeah? It's a manifestation. These 12 nidanas are one way in which conditions, the way in which everything is conditioned, as it were. And that's one way of showing how the mind is conditioned, how who we are is conditioned by what's gone before. And so we spent a week looking at different aspects of conditionality, yeah? How conditionality pans out in different ways through the universe, as it were. And they're called the niyamas. There isn't a translation for niyama, I'm afraid. N-I-Y-A-M-A. And if you recall, if you were here, they are the physical inorganic. Yeah? The first of those is the physical inorganic. So that's the way in which physics, chemistry, geology, things like that work. It's just the laws that govern that. That's one of the levels of conditionality. The next level of conditionality is the organic or the biological. So that's the way in which biological processes operate. Things like respiration, how hormones work, all that sort of stuff. And then the next level is the non-volitional psychological. So that's, you could, some depends how you look at this, you could say that's how the senses work, things like that. But it's also kind of how memory works, how mind functions, kind of structurally, as it were. You know, how consciousness operates in the world. And then the fourth niyama is the volitional level of psychology. So this is the level of karma, this is the level of ethics, this is how actions have consequences, both for oneself, as it were, in terms of the consciousness that one develops, and cosmologically, although we didn't talk much about the second bit because it's a bit difficult to talk about. And then the fifth niyama, the fifth mode of conditionality that you could say, is the dharma niyama, yeah? That's, and the easiest way I find of understanding the dharma niyama is talking about it as describing the laws that cover spiritual practice, as it were, spiritual development, that govern the way spiritual development works. And that's what we're going to be looking at this evening, one of those. And then last week we looked most specifically at this ethical level of conditionality. We looked at karma, and we looked at Buddhist ethics. So we looked at the way Buddhism sees mind as coming first, yeah? Everything proceeds from the state of mind that you're in. How we act, how we speak, comes out as a reflection of what's going on in our minds, going on in our hearts. But that we can start to retrain the mind, not just through meditation, not just by sitting and working with the mind, directly on the mind, but by starting to consider more fully what we say and what we do. And so we looked at Buddhist precepts in terms of speech and action, as well as in terms of mind. That's what we did last week. And so tonight we're going to look at the spiral paths. We're going to look at some models of how the Dharma Niyama operates, how, what the laws are that govern the path of spiritual development, in a way. So that's loads of stuff, isn't it? Tons and tons of stuff, isn't it? Tons and tons of value for money. Top value for money. Eh?